You just found the most entertaining Iowa podcast in the world and potentially the most legitimate Iowa podcast. I mean, with guests like this, it's hard to deny. This is our third current Hawkeye coach of the summer. Head of Iowa Strength and Conditioning, Ray Braithwaite, joins the show. It's also the first show, I'm pretty sure, that I've never been on in 445 episodes. Please enjoy Coach Ray. Let's have a day. Let's go.
Washington fans, to another one of those days that can't really believe is happening on our podcast. Today we get to sit down with somebody who I know Kevin and I have an extraordinary amount of respect for. Somebody who was really one of the pivotal roles in shaping us as individuals, as men, as a team. We spent a lot of good time together, a lot of hard time together, really, really special memories coming from the newly minted, well, not newly minted now, but semi-newly minted king of strength conditioning, Coach Ray Braithwaite. Welcome to the podcast, man. This is pretty awesome.
All right. Thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it. Good to be here.
What was your immediate reaction when you found out us three ding-dongs started a podcast?
Well, I know you three ding-dongs well, so I kind of chuckled, but it fit. It was wildly appropriate.
And the reason that one of the ding-dongs isn't here, and I waited to tell Coach Ray this until we were rolling, Kluver missed podcast with you, Coach, for the CrossFit games that he's not even in. He's just watching.
That the respect. I love it. But he's not even participating. Couldn't be bothered to show up.
Nope.
Couldn't phone in. Couldn't nothing.
Nothing. Can't be bothered.
I mean, for the regular fans of the podcast will know that. I will phone in on the road. He is driving back from Madison right now, but did not deem it worthy enough to join us on this day. And for CrossFit, you're in strength and conditioning. Give me your honest take on CrossFit.
Out here alienating everybody.
No, just Kluver. We just want you to alienate Kluver.
Kluver's always been in the CrossFit. So that's why I say it's, like I said about you guys starting a podcast, him going to CrossFit and driving through the dead of night to get there and come back. It's on brand for Kluver. It's on brand.
1,000,000%. I know DeMarco's gotten super into it now out at Elon. Is there anyone else in the strength and conditioning world that you know has gotten kind of into it after the last few years, or any of the current guys on your staff doing it?
Yeah, no one on our staff currently, no.
You still keep in touch with DeMarco pretty good?
We talk off and on.
Yeah. He's we keep in touch pretty good. I'm a big DeMarco fan. He's a cool dude.
Yeah,
he's so a great guy. Curious about what your thoughts on what he's doing with a lot of his athletes. Obviously, he spent a lot of time under you and the Iowa staff, but then he went out to Elon and started doing like kind of even more emphasis on the single leg stuff. Like he's doing a ton of like reverse lunges on his athletes instead of doing like a lot of back squatting. Like, I don't think he does any back squatting anymore.
Yeah, away from back squatting. Doesn't do a ton of Olympic lifting. And there's a lot of stuff that we've learned from DeMarco. Like, DeMarco is always, he maintains a beginner's mind. He's always trying to stay on the forefront of new things in the field of strength conditioning. And there's a lot of stuff that he's done that we've adopted. Like, we've learned a lot from DeMarco since he's left. So he's doing his thing.
Okay.
Does the strength conditioning program still look pretty similar to the way that we did it when we were there?
There's been changes, more similarities than differences, I'll tell you. But like anything, we evolve and we change. But our big rocks are still our big rocks. We still squat. We still Olympic lift. We still do.
We were just gawking at the size of the offensive line on the depth chart. So. Looks like you were doing some decent work with them big boys.
Yep.
decent refueling work there. So let's take it back. Let's take it back to the start of your career. Why did you want to get into strength and conditioning? Kind of take us through your original path to get in and to where you got to now.
Great question. So originally I thought I wanted to go into sports medicine. I thought I wanted to be an athletic trainer.
Okay.
I started down that path in my undergrad, and I worked at a physical therapy clinic in Pensacola, where my University of West Florida, where I did my undergrad.
Mm-hmm.
And it got me some experience in that arena. And it made me quickly realize that that's not what I wanted to do. Just for me personally, I came to realize, and just my outlook on it was, I feel like the sports med athletic training side and the strength and conditioning side are two different sides of the same coin.
Sure.
I saw that area as more reactive than proactive.
Mm-hmm.
Typically when you're going to see a trainer, it's never a good thing. It means something on your body is broken down.
And I was just about to say one of the main differences between strength conditioning and physical train or the trainers is that you get to deal with us when we're in good moods and ready to train. They get to deal with us when we're all crabby and hurt.
Nailed it. You nailed it. And that's the other reason. It's you see a different side of a person, where it takes somebody, a special individual, to be an athletic trainer, because you have to, rebuild the mental as well as the physical. So there's something mm-hmm. to be said for that. There's a skill set for that. That's very important. But I wanted, like you mentioned, Kulik, I wanted to be on the other side.
Yeah.
Like, you guys come in the weight room trying to physically, change your bodies so that you don't go to the training room. So that's the proactive side that I really appreciated about strength and conditioning path. So that's kind of what drew me to it.
Sure. And then, so you went from being a personal trainer, did you go back to school and kind of get a little more exercise science, or did you kind of have the background necessary to get a strength and conditioning job from there?
So I didn't, I was never a personal trainer. So I switched gears. And so I got my undergrad in what back in the day used to be called sports science. Now it's exercise science.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. Our degree.
Yeah. And then I went to Florida State. I got my master's in exercise physiology. And that was my first introduction into collegiate strength conditioning.
Okay.
And so I did an internship there, and then worked as a restricted earnings assistant under John Jost. And then Coach Jost had a connection with Coach Doyle. They worked together at another school. I believe it was at Holy Cross back in the day.
Okay. Yep.
And so there was an opening at Iowa that Jost said, hey, this is after I graduated and I was still working there. He's like, hey, a friend of mine works at Iowa. There's an opening. You should put your name in for it, and see what happens. So I put my name in for the job, applied for it, and I got an opportunity to come up and interview, flew me up to Iowa City, and ended up getting the job. And this was in 2002, spring of 2002.
That was a good year to come in.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, so you came in with the likes of like Abdul Hodge would have been in his prime years right then. That was like when the Bullies of the Big Ten got started. So I would have loved to have been around the weight room around
me
that
too.
Time. What was your impression coming into the Iowa weight room? Was it any different from the Florida State weight room, or just overall impressions coming to Iowa City?
Different programs running a different style. You could definitely tell, Florida State was like 2 years removed from a national title. Like, come mm-hmm. to Iowa, and they were operating like they were – had just won a national title, even though they hadn't. Like, you could see something was coming down the tracks. So those guys were regimented about their business. They weren't messing around in the weight room. And, 2002 wasn't just a flash in the pan or just kind of pie in the sky, just explosion. That was something that was building well before I got, obviously, well sure. before I got to Iowa City. But
Coach Hodge had just come on the podcast, and he was talking about how special that group of guys was.
They were different now. They were different. Wired different. Everything they did was top notch.
What do you think drives that in a team? Like, what, when you walk into a weight room or walk into a practice and you just see guys humming, like pushing weight, like just dominating their practices, their lifts, whatever. What do you think is the biggest driver in getting a team to that level of performance?
I think, first of all, I think internal motivation. They're not motivated about rankings and all this other stuff. They're motivated by excellence, trying to be the best. And to do that, and a part of that, byproduct of that, is accountability. They police themselves. Like if a guy misses a line or skips a rep, somebody's jumping his ass.
Yeah.
And making sure he does it right. And there's internal conflict. That's good internal conflict. Not in anything negative. It's like, hey, man, we're going to do this a certain way. There's a certain standard. They have their own standards that are outside of what the coaches have their own standards, right? And those teams tend to coach themselves. The coaches don't have to do a lot of the chasing guys around to do stuff right. They self-police. And that's the thing that sets those teams apart. And that's one of the things I think our current squad has. And also they're together. Mm-hmm. They really genuinely care about one another. They're not just there because they're obligated, because they're on the same team, so I have to deal with this guy. They genuinely like one another. Regardless of their background, you know, talk about Coach Hodge and Greenway, couldn't be from two different. But they'll lay down the railroad tracks for one another because they genuinely care and respect for the guy they're working with and they're training with, and the good teams have that in them.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And then I'd just throw on top of that is like, they just love competing. Like I just remember the best training days that we ever had as a team was when guys were always trying to one up each other, always trying to beat each other in whatever rep we were doing. It was the competition going, like how much fun you had just competing with your teammates.
And competing everything. Like you guys would compete not just in the weight room, like everything was a competition.
And that was what I was going to ask, Coach, was one of my questions. Was going to be like, what do you think makes the strength conditioning program the most successful? And in my opinion, it was that competition in everything. Speed was a competition. The weight room was a competition. Conditioning was a competition. And competition breeds excellence. So that was my opinion. I don't know what yours might be.
I second that. And also, our standards don't deviate based on who we're talking to. Like this podcast is called Washed Up Walk-Ons, right?
Yes, sir.
We didn't like. I remember Kevin, Drake, when you were here. Like the standard. I don't care if you're a walk on. You better put your hand on the line and run. And you know, I always saw it as like the high tide raises all the boats.
Yeah.
So now you're competing against scholarship guys, and scholarship guys know that day in day out they better bring it because this walk on Drake is like what's his deal? I bet he's going to embarrass me. You know what I mean? And not just embarrassment motivates performance, but you understand what I'm saying. Like it's
it does.
Like Ward, like you're talking about competition. Like where the hell? Where does this guy get off competing against me? Like I would all state, all whatever. I'm a fight. Like I'm bringing it. Like I'm Kevin Ward. I don't care who you are. We're gonna compete right now.
Absolutely. And just being able to foster an environment like that. I mean, that was honestly one of the things I miss most now being. What's going on 6 years retired is just being in that environment every single day where you got guys bringing it, competing, always, you know, performing at a high level. It's not something you find out in corporate America a whole lot of. Going back to your time in Iowa, didn't you, you went back to Florida for a little time, correct? During your tenure?
Oh, no, I went. You're talking about when I left?
Yeah.
Iowa the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I got a head job at Delaware State University.
Okay, that's right. So you take that job, and then what brings you back to Iowa City afterwards?
So I take that job, and it was I took that job on the strength of the head football coach there at the time.
Mm-hmm.
His name was Al Levan, a great man. He has since passed away. But Coach Levan had worked with Coach Ferentz in Baltimore. So Coach Levan was one of the best running back coaches in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And so got wind of that job. Actually, Coach Jackson's the one that kind of initially gave me the heads up of the job. And Coach Ferentz spoke highly of the guy. I flew out to Delaware and I checked out their facilities and they were really bad. The weight room specifically was really bad. It was like working in a broom closet. But I knew I had the full support of the head football coach, and he was going to give me carte blanche. He wasn't going to micromanage me. And it's like, I trust your abilities, and there's something to be said for that. And that's the reason, one of the main reasons why I took the job is because he was going to allow me to do my job, and he trusted me, and we had a really good relationship. So I was there from 2003 2005 through the 2007 season.
Oh, and so that's
my last season there. That last year, we built a new weight room, 10,000 square foot weight room, and we
Big for a smaller school.
Yeah, yeah, for 1AA, it was legit. It was very similar to our old weight room. And then that last season, we also won the conference title, which was the first time we had won the conference in like 20 years, which was a big – everything in that program across not just football, all the sports were doing this. And so it wasn't like a slam dunk when I got the call to come back to be Coach Doyle's head assistant, because, you know, the head assistant at the time, James Thompson, left to be the head guy at Nebraska, and Chris called me to be the head assistant. And I had to think about it for a minute because I had a lot of sweat equity in the program we had just built. Sure, from working there, broom closet to 10,000 square foot weight room.
It's not easy to walk away from what you built.
Exactly, exactly. And it was hard, the relationships and everything. But long-term for me professionally, I thought it was the right move. And, you know, that's how I ended up back at Iowa.
Nice. So you're gone for the 05 season, the 06 season, the 07 season for the Hawks?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
For any good Hawkeye fan out there, I don't think those were the best seasons, and I think we just found out why. So,
nah.
Coach Ray is not allowed to leave anymore.
No more leaving. He wouldn't want to, though. I mean, look, what strength conditioning coach wouldn't want the Iowa job? You have the absolute utmost backing from the head coach. You have a palace to work in, and you have a bunch of athletes who, like, are just used to that standard. They're going to grind their balls off for you. I feel like the Iowa head strength job is one of the Mount Rushmore jobs for a strength coach. It has to be.
It's a great job. I think you strip all those things you listed away. I think one of the things you hit on is the kids. Like, our coaches do an excellent job of identifying guys that fit Iowa. Because Iowa, as you guys know, what we do isn't for everybody. And our belief system
it's not supposed to be.
It's not anybody can just walk in the program and survive and thrive and flourish in this program. And that's one of the things I love. I appreciate. But again, it comes down to the kids and the people you're working with. First and foremost, it doesn't have to be, we don't have to have a palace of a weight room, but if you have kids that believe and want to work hard and, like what you mentioned, compete, you're going to win.
Mm-hmm.
Let us train outside. We're still going to, we're still going to give you a problem on the field.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So
that smoothie station doesn't suck.
It does not suck.
I kind of want to talk about the recruiting aspect a little bit. What is your involvement when, like, either a position coach or like Tyler and the recruiting team come to you with, like, hey, we were thinking about this athlete. Do they ever get you guys involved? Like, hey, what can we turn this guy into? What can we expect to get him up weight wise, size wise? You know, is this something, a product we can work with and kind of mold into what we need?
It's more of established on my end. It's more of establishing relationships with that athlete and the athlete's, you know, family. Because they have to, you know, I aim to be brutally honest with what they're getting themselves into. So there's no I didn't know it was going to, they have to understand like what it's going to take to be successful in our program. And it's like you said, Drake, it's not for everybody. I mean,
you show them a training day and what it looks like when they're in the recruiting process? Would you sit them down and show them what?
Yeah, if they so happen to walk in while we're training and they can see what we're doing, but I try to illustrate that and explain to them what a yearly calendar looks like. And, you know, I explain to them.
Man, when you sit down and look at a yearly calendar all in one, you got to eat it all in one meal. That's one that's tough to look at.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that, like, you know, anyone can go in and knock out an hour and a half lift, right? It's doing it over the course of a year, the whole embodiment of what you're asked to do as a student athlete. That's what's hard to sign up for, and that's what's not for everybody, right?
Tried to max hang clean after track practice? Because we were out there fucking sprinting every damn day.
You're out there doing 45 minutes of, you know, high intensity sprint work, and then you're in the weight room for another 45 minutes to an hour, and then you got to rinse, repeat, do that again and again and again. 4 to 5 years, and that's the only way we're going to get it done.
Hey guys, I'm going to break up the action real quick. The boys are crushing this episode with Coach Ray. Got to pay the bills for just one second. Couple things lining up for the walk-ons this year. First of all, long term, shout out to Betfred, new title sponsor of the podcast. Just signed a deal with them through the season. potentially longer. Betfred taking over as the title sponsor, going to allow the walk-ons a bunch of opportunities. Obviously, to continue to produce this show, a financial side of things is a big key portion of that. And title sponsors, any sponsors that we get on the show, are massive. So shout out to Betfred for coming along. We're going to be doing some cool stuff with them as time goes on. Next, and more urgently important, is we want to let you guys know we're doing a show at Back Pocket Brewery, a live show on September 1st, tentatively right now, slotted in at 2 o'clock. We'll be there from 2 to 4. It'll be me, Kevin Ward, and Gary G-Bone, G-String. The three of us doing a live show podcast, I think just stuck in the corner somewhere. And then after we record the show, we'll have a little meet and greet, and we'll have merchandise to buy on site. Would love for you to come meet us. We certainly love seeing and talking with fans in person. We've gotten to do that a couple times in the past, most notably at the Big Ten Championship game, last year at the Rusty Toolbox game, and now Back Pocket is allowing us the opportunity to do it again. So come by. I think if you sit close enough, you'll be able to hear us do our live show, have some drinks, have some food, talk it up with us afterwards, get a couple pieces of cool merchandise for the season, and be on your way. It is sort of kind of a part of Fry Fest, which is going on that weekend. Obviously, the home opener against Utah State is that next morning at 11 a.m. That's it. We'll go back to the show. Enjoy the rest of the episode with Coach Ray Braithwaite.
So I'm kind of curious. Are you guys being kind of over communicative of what the kids are signing up for? Because I know we had a lot of attrition during our time, right? And I think we graduated with less than 50% of the class that we came in with.
It was like 33%.
Yeah, something stupid. Are you guys kind of taking that as a fact as to why we have to like really let these kids know what they're signing up for? Because there's no point in us bringing in a kid that's not going to make it.
There's that. And then on the flip side of that, you have to let them know that they're going to have support. It's going to be challenging, right? But a kid's got to know that you're not doing this on your own.
Right.
Like you have myself, you have a position coach, you have academics, you have all the resources in place to help you weather the storm that you're going to go into.
For sure.
And, you know, and it's not all going to be negative. It's not going to like, it's going to be hard, but we're going to have a good time. Like I would argue that you guys would both agree with me that training is hard, but it's some of the best times of your life.
Oh, absolutely.
Some of the hardest and they have to understand that when it is hard, that's exactly where you're supposed to be. The hardest days, that's where you're meant to be. That's where you're going to figure out what you're made of. If it's easy all the time, you're not learning anything about yourself. Like you can't be, and I tell every kid I meet with, you can't be comfortable and grow.
No,
you cannot. If you are comfortable all the time, you're not growing. You're just stagnating. Now there's a certain measure of growth that occurs just, you know, chronologically evolving from an 18-year-old to a 22-year-old, but you're never going to see your full potential if you're comfortable all the time.
100%.
Do the recruits
more than just strength and conditioning too?
Do the recruits come to understand that you as the head strength conditioning coach at Iowa are almost like the gateway to the field? Like we don't spend time with anybody more than the strength staff. And like, I know in our program, the respect that I earned from the strength staff, especially Coach Doyle, was the only reason I got any looks to actually play, because I kind of sucked for a long time, but I was good in the weight room and I grinded hard. And I know that the strength staff was like an advocate for me. So I just wonder if recruits really get that idea of how important it is in our program.
They do. I honestly think they do. And that's one of the things I communicate, like you just said. You know, your instructors are going to change from semester to semester. There's going to be windows of time. You don't have access to your position coach, but the faces you're going to see all the time for the next 4 to 5 years are these faces. Myself and the other guys on the strength staff. So you have to work. If you're going to, or like you said, earn your way on the field.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of going on top of that. What is like kind of the dynamic between you and the head coach with KF? Like, obviously, he gives you reins to run your program as you see fit. But where does he fit in with, you know, how you structure things? How, you know, and then does he come to you with like, hey, who's performing really well? Who do we got to worry about? Like, just talk about like how the relationship dynamic and the work dynamic is between you and KF.
Oh, Coach Ferris is the best. Like, you nailed it. He gives me freedom to organize things the way I see fit. And I think he does that with everybody. He hires us and puts us in positions to be successful and gives us the resources we need to be successful. So with that being said, we owe him our best. Like, we are obligated to give him our best day in, day out. I make it a point to check in with him daily just so he has a feel, because he's like everybody. He's busy, just like the other position coaches in the offseason out recruiting. So they don't really have eyes on the team. So I'm their conduit to the weight room. So I have to check in with him constantly to make sure he's abreast with what's going on our end. But we have a great relationship. He's the best.
So obviously, you know, culture was a big top talking point and a big emphasis for when we played. And I know it is now as well. Do you guys kind of have, and that I always felt like that was really driven by the strength staff, because like you said, that's who we were with 5 days a week, pretty much all damn year.
I second that.
Will you guys like have like a, any sort of talks about like, hey, this is what we want to emphasize about our culture this year? Like, I know back in 2015, it was slight edge, just about doing the little things right every single day. And then, you know, there's little tweaks to the message every single year about this is what we're going to emphasize, you know, read a different book. We want to emphasize these principles here. I'm just kind of curious, how do you go about shaping the culture every year? Cause you can't have the same message every year cause it gets stagnant. Right. Mm-hmm. I'm just kind of curious where you kind of build the culture up from every year. Like, what's your process?
So one thing I truly believe is tradition doesn't graduate. Your culture shouldn't graduate. Like, and when you guys leave the building, you guys are in our core leadership. When you leave, there should be remnants of what you guys established still in the building. Sure. Just like before you guys got there, like in 02, there's remnants of 02 that were still in the building when you guys got there, whether you really realize it or not. Mm-hmm. With that being said, you know, every year, you know, we have 30 new kids come into the program that don't have no idea what our culture is, what our standards are. So every year we're forced to revisit those things for a new group of guys. And one thing I always have to tell myself is I can't get bored with the message, because it's the same for me, but it's different for this group of guys. This 4-year rotation of people I'm dealing with every single year. So it's like, for example, Ward, you hit on the slight edge. Like every year we're reading the slight edge. You guys know that.
Still.
That's the freshman Bible. But think about it, that's where everything's that's everything's built off of that. Consistent daily disciplines over time leads to big results. Like if you don't understand that, then you have no shot.
Yeah.
As a freshman. Like if you like it takes what's that saying? It takes years to become an overnight success. The guy that popped, I was like, oh, where'd he come from? Like, he's been cooking for the longest time because he's done the little thing. And then eventually Drake Hewlett starting fullback. Like, where the hell – or Kevin Ward's a core special teams guy. Where did he come – like, he's been cooking. This has been building. So as a freshman, that's – you know, talk about things being stale. It could be stale for me, but this freshman's never read the slight edge before.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, our core principles, tough, smart, physical, together – every year we have to reteach those and re-engage with those, because we might touch upon them in the wintertime, all right, and they might sprinkle in those themes throughout the year. But, you know, we're dealing with guys with a lot on their plate, and those themes, the things we stand for, if we don't revisit those constantly, they'll go away.
Sure, yeah.
I truly believe that.
Yeah.
Now, to your point, there's things, and we consistently, like you talked about the books, our player council, the captains, offseason Hawkeye Championship team captains, they'll read a different book every year, the guys that are voted in. So this year we read Do Hard Things by Steve Magnus.
I've heard great things about that book.
And they pulled things out of that book that they really wanted to hammer home. So I try to make it organic. I try to make it the players lead that.
Mm-hmm.
With our oversight, obviously, as coaches, we're going to kind of make it work, and if it's a something that doesn't really fit, you know, we'll try to tweak it. But I believe that if it's coming from the locker room, if it's player led, there's going to be more buy-in than me sitting up on my high horse and like wagging to you and dictating what you're going to believe in.
Yeah.
If we read a book and we read it together, because I'm reading the book, the same book that the player council is reading, and it's something that, oh man, we're really into this, and they present it to the team, now it has some legs, and now it's something that a message that they're going to carry forward to their teammates.
So you mentioned Hawkeye Championship, Coach. That was one of my absolute favorite parts of Iowa football, if we're being honest, because you have to find fun in the suck, and that was like very clear fun in the suck because it made everything so competitive. Is it still very similar? You guys do it, or has it evolved?
It's evolved. There's things we've tweaked and changed on it, but it's still the method is still the same. Like, we still have.
Can you explain the ideology to the listeners?
Well, the purpose of the Hawkeye Championship is, I believe, behavior modification to get guys to improve and raise their standards and do things differently. Like I told the guys in January, if we're operating the same way as a team right now, as we are, you know, 5 months from now in August or 6 months from now in August, then we will have failed. The Hawkeye Championship will not have worked.
Yep.
But it's layers of accountability, you know, and going back to slide edge, layers of this, doing the simple things consistently every day is what's going to win you the Hawkeye Championship. Rarely is the Hawkeye Championship won by the most physically dominant, like, athletic team. It's a team that does all the little things right all the time, because you got to remember.
I always described it as the don't fuck up championship.
It is.
Like you said, you don't have to go out there and have a bunch of guys who are winning all the speed competitions, weight room competitions, etc. If you have guys that made their body weight every week, made their conditioning times, didn't miss tutoring, was at every training table, you were going to win. No question about it.
The basics. Basics. If you're brilliant at the basics, you'll nail it. You nail it. But think about how that applies to football. Directly applies to football. If your assignment's off, your alignment, your technique's off on one play, you got it's you and 10 of your brothers on the field. And all it takes is one. Every 10 dudes could be doing everything to a T, right? It takes one guy. Just off just a little bit, the play's blown up, or the ball flying over our head for a touchdown.
Yep. No, it's just do your job. Take care of your job first before you're going and taking care of anyone else's backyard.
And that mindset right there that Kevin just mentioned, and you coach, is like hammered in every single day of your life as an Iowa football player, to the point where that's like your only thought process is like, just do my job. Just at all times, tunnel vision, do my job, and everything's going to work out.
Show up, do your job. You'd be okay.
Yep.
Let's get back into your job. Who are some guys that had some awesome weight room performances this last offseason? Who are we going to see pop on the field this fall?
Great question. I think Logan Jones continues to progress.
We love to hear that.
I've heard he's
a little bit of amazing centers.
He's coming. What was that, Kev?
I heard he's a little bit of a weight room freak. No,
just a little bit. A little bit. He's really good. Cooper DeJean had awesome offseason. Kyler Fisher, talk about walk-ons that progressed to earn the scholarship.
Yeah, I love that.
Kyler Fisher, as a senior, had one of the best off-seasons I can remember from a senior. You know, as a senior, like your
gains are pretty much tapped out.
Yes. Yeah. You've squeezed everything out. And this guy PR'd across the board. Like,
wow.
every metric, all of his performance.
So he's a Golden Hawk in a senior year.
I think he missed Golden Hawk like by like 500ths of a second.
Like
minuscule.
A senior year Golden Hawk is like a unicorn, man. That is like insanely.
I think he missed like maybe one metric, but still, if as a senior, if you're getting three, if you PR on three things, it's Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
But you were locked in, and he did it on multiple things. So he's a guy that I can't say enough. I'm so proud of that kid, and I hope he plays well. I think he's going to play well.
He's been getting a lot of praise on this podcast for sure.
Yeah, he's awesome. Go through. Who else has done really well?
Is there anybody that like? You know, when they're squatting or they're hand cleaning, the whole room just kind of shuts down to go watch them. Like, I know we had We had Sheriff and Worf back in our day. Whenever they
Jennings were doing Dunker.
You stole it. So I was going to say Jones and Jennings Dunker. Mustache. I call him Stash because he had that big orange mustache on his face. But Stash, yeah, he's the guy that, you know, the record skips when he starts squatting. Everyone just kind of freezes and watches what he's doing.
Oh man, that's awesome. I do miss those days where you get somebody just putting an obscene amount of weight on the bar and just going to town on it.
That was Werf's. That was Sheriff. That was, remember Imani Jones?
Oh yeah, Imani Jones speed squatting. When he'd have the blue bands on there and four plates on each side, and it looks like he was just popping out of a chair, is probably almost more impressive than watching Sheriff hang clean 400 something pounds.
Yeah, Imani, when he would squat, there was no strain; it was smooth.
Yeah,
no sticking point. No, he was just down up, down up.
Yeah,
I'd give to have legs that work like those.
What? Any all-time biggest freaks? Name your top. Give me your top three all-time biggest freaks in your 20 years of Iowa football.
And after that, give me a Mount Rushmore of strength conditioning performances, because that took the words right out of my mouth.
Okay, biggest freaks, I would go back to Bob.
Okay.
Hell yeah.
I would say Bob. I would say Robert Gallery was a freak.
More than Sheriff?
He's in the list. Like Sheriff's in the list. They were both right there. Mike Daniels was a freak. He was damn near 300 pounds, and he had like a 40-inch vert.
Jeez.
Whoa. I remember seeing that record, like 39 and a half.
Yeah, he was like right there at 40. And he weighed like 295.
Think about how much force he's putting through the ground.
It's nuts.
That might be more impressive than the hang clean, I think.
I mean, that's incredible.
We had a DB here last year, Xavier Williams.
Yeah.
He jumped last spring 40. He had a 40. It was 45.6. And he did it at my, you know how we line up the jump mats?
Yeah.
And so he happened to be at my mat when he did it, and he jumped, and his feet hung out by my forehead for like 3 seconds, and then he hit the ground. I was like, that's a record. I looked over, it was 45.6. It was insane. That was the most impressive thing I've seen.
How quickly can you tell when a guy enters the program, like, oh, this guy's going to be a weight room, like, special dude?
You can tell, like, everyone's coming from different training backgrounds out of high school. Some guys are, like, five-sport kids that never have had, a clean training window off-season and, like, really dedicate to the weight room. Other guys are, like, two- or three-sport guys that have a window of time where they can really train. So I would say through their first summer, their initial summer as a freshman, you can kind of tell, like, this guy is going to be really special when it comes to training.
Then kind of extrapolate that. At what point do you see, like, okay, this guy's weight room and on the field, like, not on the field, like football field, but, like, you know, when we're doing agility drills and stuff, at what point do you see, like, hey, yeah, this guy's can really help out our team, like, it, you know, on the field in Kinnick?
That's a tougher question. How, from a training perspective, how quickly can you see that?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, it's like you got this kid who, I don't know, maybe he's a walk-on, maybe he's a lightly recruited guy. He's not going to play this year. He's going to redshirt. At what point do you feel like, okay, he's got enough athleticism to him that he can help us out on Saturdays?
I think once you get through that, you can tell who's coming that first summer. You can definitely tell the guys that potentially could help us out.
Sure.
Like once you get to the end of that their first summer. And then when we get through the end of their first winter phase, their first truly heavy like training phase, that's when you can really tell going into the first spring ball.
Yeah.
That first winter phase was really eye-opening because you go out there and the amount of speed work we had to do, my legs were not used to that whatsoever. And then you go in and you train heavy as hell. You guys are trying to get us to put on, 2 pounds a month in a lot of instances, a pound and a half a month. And that was real eye-opening.
Yeah, that winter phase, when you think about it, Drake, that winter phase is the one point in time where we can really push like strength and speed. because you're not conditioning, right? You're not preparing to play football.
Right.
It's all training.
Right.
So if you're eating right, you're recovering, and like we can really push the envelope in terms of our intensity and what we're doing with you guys, because when we get in spring ball, the training's different. When we get to the summertime, the train, like, we can't go as hard as we did in the wintertime because we're trying to peak our conditioning.
Right.
And we can't really truly peak your strength when you're peaking your conditioning at the same time. You're going to get hurt, right?
Mm-hmm. It still felt like we were doing some pretty heavy lifting in the summer, though.
We were, because coming out of the May break, you had like 3 weeks off in May, so you have to re-engage and tap into your strength so you still have it, right?
Right.
So we're still doing heavy stuff like into late June, but when the calendar flips to July, like we're peaking, that's more –
Yeah, we're spending so much more time on the field with skills and drills and those cuts and 60s and everything.
So we have to kind of take some stuff off the plate in the weight room to compensate for the fact that you're on the field so much more.
Yeah.
Is everybody's favorite still Stations in 60s Day, or have we moved beyond that?
We have not. We're not changing that. Talk about things that don't change. Like
you can't change that hurt. You have to go through it.
And
it's like you guys always chose the hottest fucking day of the summer to do that day.
It just lines up perfectly, and you got to get acclimated to the heat, right? You're wearing a vest, you're doing a bunch of change direction stuff and stops and starts, and it directly applies to what you're going to see when you get into camp when you've got a helmet and shoulder pads on. You got to get exposed to it at some point, so.
Yeah. Speaking of, are you guys still doing a lot of the GPS work on all your athletes? Like,
yeah, we still track that. We still use that a lot.
Who's touching the top speed?
Yeah.
Ooh, right now.
It's got to be Cooper.
It's Vines.
Ooh.
It's Deontay Vines and DeJean
Cooper. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you guys do a lot of kind of analysis when you're tracking that data on the macro level too? Like when you're saying like, hey, we got – say you're, what, a week into camp now, like our guys are starting to slow down a little bit. Should we pull off the reins a little bit here and kind of let them rest and recover? Or like, what do you guys do anything with the data analysis there? Or are you just kind of looking practice by practice, what speed guys are hitting, et cetera?
Well, I'm looking more so at total volume and workload.
Okay.
When we're looking at high speed distance, if a guy spikes in terms of his high speed distance, we have to be aware of that, because if he comes back and accumulates multiple days, that's a hamstring waiting to go.
Sure. Yeah.
So we have to be aware and keenly in tune to where guys are at in terms of workload. And that way I can communicate it to the position coach and say, hey, this guy had a big day yesterday. You might want to cut back on his reps.
Just
keep him in the fight.
Just how much has data analytics and kind of technology change strength conditioning, and how vitally important is it?
It's changed it a ton, because now you have objective data. It's not like I feel or I think. It's like, this is what the numbers say. So it takes your opinion and what you feel and tosses it out the window, because you may be feeling one thing, but the data is telling you something else. And so, and you might seek the opinion of the athlete and say, what do you feel? And they might give you a completely different answer than what you think in your head that they've experienced. So the hard data to kind of support thoughts or kind of rebut or kind of like fly in the face of what you're thinking and give you a different perspective is huge.
Made it easier to individually tune training? Because we talked about that on this podcast at length one time, that Iowa strength conditioning program broken up into three different groups was a very good way of kind of individualizing the training. But do we think that you could create even better athletes with purely individualized training methods for each athlete? Does it like help to almost narrow that gap?
It does. And we use it. Like, there's a certain point in time where a kid has to train and train hard.
Yep.
Like, when you're a younger guy and you're so far away from your peak strength, your potential, like, those individuals have to get stronger, and they have to train to the point that you wouldn't train an older guy.
Sure.
The guys that are closer to their potential don't need that type of training. So the the analytics and some of the data and some of the stuff that like the Attendo unit, mm-hmm. form of technology that like, most people have, helps us in instances like that.
Attendos are phenomenal.
For those that don't know, they're tracking the acceleration of the bar when you attach it when you do like a speed squat like that, and you're seeing how fast the bar speed. Is basically. Yeah.
Right.
So you can see how much force guys are putting out. So, you know, you can have two guys both squatting 250 pounds with some bands attached to it, but one guy's moving the bar a hell of a lot faster, creating a lot more power.
For the advanced group, coach, do you still have guys trying to – I'm sure this is a dumb question because it's yes, but do you still have guys trying to find new methodologies to try out on the advanced guys? Because like you said, we're much closer at the end of our career when we're in that advanced group to our max potential. So like changing – when we went to French contrast training, like a totally different ideology of training to shock the system in a different way to maybe – get some extra performance out of the advanced group. You still trying to just do more unique things?
Yeah, we try to. Like we try to do some velocity based stuff with the older guys just so they could kind of auto-regulate like their training. Like where we're not just going by percentage of what you put on the bar, we're going by speed. Mm-hmm. If you fall below a certain threshold, you may take weight off the bar, but clearly your nervous system's a little shot.
Yeah.
If you're feeling great that day and your numbers are above whatever threshold we set, okay, we'll add more weight to the bar.
Yep. So
it's kind of just a simple example of meeting a guy where he's at.
God, I miss that stuff.
G-Bone, what do you got? We haven't got you in here too many times.
Yeah, I don't want to go back too much, but I am curious. I mean, I wasn't there when these guys were in the program, right? But if you wanted to fill me in, between the three of these guys, if you remember, who was the most impressive in the weight room?
Ooh, I love this question.
Man, make me...
We can toss out Kluver, I'm pretty sure.
Which is my favorite kid. they were all impressive in their own way, I'll tell you that. No, it's a
there was not a damn thing impressive about Kluver.
his mobility.
Oh, impressive. You know what? He did have great mobility, and he was decent at running pro agility. I'll give him that.
Decent. He could do a handstand. Yeah. How about that?
Yeah, there you go.
He could run his fucking mouth pretty good, too.
He couldn't do a handstand.
Okay. Or do you remember, like, maybe you don't have to, like, pick favorites, but do you remember, like, first impressions at all? Like, oh, Drake Kulik comes in the weight room the first time?
Yeah, I thought they were all slaps.
we were.
No shot. What are we doing with these kids in our program?
That's
taking
fair.
A step back. we've regressed. And now look at them. Look at us now.
Here we are.
All three of them started, so it shows what I know.
Yeah.
But to be fair to you, Coach, on that, like, what do I know? We did analytically have the worst recruiting class in, like, a long time. 2013 was a tough recruiting class.
Hey, it's like no one can predict the future, right?
Turned out to be a bunch of gritty grinders.
You guys got after it.
I'm going to kind of echo some of your thoughts there. I thought both Drake and Kluver were huge D-bags. When I first
And guess what? You were right, dude.
Oh, man. Nailed it.
Yeah.
Bullseye. But,
you know, you spend enough time with the guys doing a bunch of crazy shit over the course of 4 to 5 years, you can make friends with just about anybody. So here we are. 10 years later, Drake. 10 years later.
Still doing it.
Yeah, still doing
it. And on that very topic, Coach, is there in the program amongst the staff, is there a bit of an idea or an understanding that you need to beat the ego out of the kids in a way? Not beat them physically like that, but through the work.
Them a little bit. They've been spending the last 3 years having everyone tell them how awesome they are.
Yes.
Through the work and kind of through the tone of expectations and other things to beat the ego out of you.
Yeah, I hesitate to use the word beat the ego, but one of the first things, you know, we always come in and the first thing we take our guys through is their functional movement screen, their FMS.
Mm.
And prior to
humbling.
That, I try to tell them, or I do tell them, the keys to success in the program. And first thing I tell them is no one cares about your background. Like no one cares about your resume. You're going to be evaluated and judged by coaches and teammates by what you bring to the table every single day. Like when you walk in the day in the door, any particular day, that's how you're going to be judged. Like what you did yesterday no longer matters. It's what you what you're going to do today. So first thing you have to do to be successful is be on time. All right. If you're early, you're on time. If you're on time, you're late. If you're late, you're gone.
That was well drilled into us, I think.
And then
I think everyone was terrified of being late.
Terrified to the point where it carries on in your subconscious for years.
Waking up in the bed in a cold sweat.
Yep. Still happens every now and then.
The next thing I'll tell them, listen. All right. And you listen with your eyes. So when you're being addressed by a coach, you're not looking at the ground or looking up at the ceiling. You're looking them dead in the eyes so that you can pick up. If you may not be paying attention, but, you know, you may pick up more by what you see than what you hear.
Sure.
So listen. And the last thing is a two-parter. All right. Effort and attitude. Like every single day, come in with great attitude, willing to give 100% effort.
All right? So two things you can control.
Two things you can control. And notice the things that I said led to success have nothing to do with how fast you run or how tall you are or how strong you are, because those things are a byproduct of the things I just listed.
Yep.
If you show up on time, if you listen, if you give good effort, and if you have an attitude, you're going to become stronger. You're going to get faster. You're going to learn the systems and techniques, and you're going to learn everything. Mm-hmm. And that's what it takes. But if you're missing any one of those things, you have no shot.
And I would say we had a number of teammates that were very unremarkable athletes, but ended up being big contributors just by following those rules right there.
Kev, have you ever looked in a mirror? Because or like on this podcast?
Yes. Okay. Maybe I was talking about us, but yes.
So, Coach, I got another question for you then. So you've been involved in strength and conditioning now for over two decades. Is there anything that you look back on maybe like in like the early 2000s was either like a philosophy in strength and conditioning or like a frequent exercise maybe that you're like, I cannot believe we were actually doing that, like with the knowledge you know now?
Oh, boy. That's a good question. That we've always been pretty spot on. Gosh, there's got to be something.
Maybe you guys nailed everything. Like that'd be the best answer.
No, there's got to be something. It's just escaping me right now. Well, it's just specific to us. One thing that we changed going back to the stations, like when you mentioned stations board, you talked about 60s following up the stations. That's one thing we did change.
What are we doing now?
We're doing 55s instead.
Oh, that ain't the same.
No, that makes that day a whole lot less anxiety riddled.
You guys just did like 45 minutes of a bunch of change of direction, right?
I know.
That's what made it so much harder.
We're going to stack it on top of more change of direction with 60-yard shuttles.
I know you're right. I just want to know that the guys currently are suffering like we once did. That's all I care about.
No, they still get it, but that was a bad deal.
So do you remember the one fateful day of stations and 60s during our career that like changed them a little bit? You remember that day that almost dropped us all dead?
Was that one of those hot days?
It was a hot day where there was a couple dudes that ended up getting heat sicknesses and stuff. Just it was that station 60s day. We got cooked like chickens.
There've been some hot ones.
I mean, it's always the hottest day in July without fail. It's like one of the hardest conditioning. I always thought that was a harder day than like the four quarters day.
No doubt. I truly believe that the stations days are harder than the four quarter game simulator days.
They are.
No question. Not even close.
Do you remember that morning you had us all line up as a team and run 24-60s?
Nah, never.
The whole team. Swear to God, it was the end of the summer. Every single one of the position coaches, the head coach was out there. Coach KF and BF were standing next to each other, and we did four sets of 660s to end the summer.
I think we did that instead of quarters, I think. I think that was our senior year.
Yeah.
Four sets of six?
Four sets of 660s for a 24-piece McNugget.
Wow. I'm calling BF on that one.
You can call BS all you want, but
my memory is blanked on that one.
I'm going to let you know that I was in absolute have to show off mode because I hadn't really played yet up till that point. And I had KF and BF standing right there. So I was trying to be a track star that day.
Oh, so remember, you weren't trying all the other days, Drake?
Well, there's a difference between the
prior 2 months of the summer, and you saved it for that instance.
I'm not gonna tell you that there weren't times where I knew what the threshold was and I wasn't trying to clear it by too much more than I needed to. I mean, I'd be a liar if I didn't say that.
I respect the honesty.
All right, Coach. I just got one last question for you. And you know, it's definitely a sensitive topic, but I just kinda wanna go over like when you took over the job, right? Under less than stellar circumstances. I just want to know, what was your message to the team and how did you kind of embrace that change and how did the team embrace that change going through a tough time as an organization?
I think, well, it was, like you said, it was incredibly challenging. I think it came down to the guys that we had in the organization that made it what it was. The team fully embraced me and my new role. And my message was that we just got to focus on moving forward and coming together more than anything else.
Sure.
That team was a really tight team. And, you know, the reason why we were able to make it through that that window of time and then we had the season that we had, which, you know, we went 6-2, was it came down to the players. The players believed in the program and believed in Coach Ferentz and believed in us in strength conditioning. And they're the ones that drove the bus. Because at the end of the day, you guys are the ones on the field, right?
Yeah.
Like we're not out there holding your hand and telling you what to do or focus on this or that. Like we're the coaches are on the sidelines and you guys are out there doing the work. We tell you what to do, but at the end of the day, you guys have to execute it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they did. They took hold of the whole thing and made my transition into my current role really good.
Yeah, that's awesome. I actually just kind of a quick additional question to that, because that was just such a wild year. What was strength and conditioning like that year? You know, being kicked out of the complex, quarantined, and then, you know, you come back on a limited basis. You know, guys have to get sent home for 2 weeks if they test positive. What was that like, and what were the challenges going on with that? Because that had to be impossible.
So we couldn't use dumbbells because of contact, you know, shared contact. We didn't want to, you know, every time you touch a dumbbell, you have to clean it. So I was like, screw that. We're not even using dumbbells. So we set up a bunch of different landmine stations just for our unilateral, like horizontal pulls, like rows or presses. Sure. We did everything off the landmine. We had a number each rack. We had to go every other rack, if I remember correctly. And we had to number each rack and assign groups of three to each rack. And that group of three was your group of three for the entire summer. And that rack was your rack for the entire summer. So everything was self-contained. So you did everything.
Did you try to like group roommates together or anything like that?
We did. Like everybody in your household was in your pop.
Oh my God.
So the guys you lived with were the guys that you trained with. And then you guys remember how the weight room's laid out. We have all the glute hams centralized. So we had to spread out the glute hams to the different pods. So everything, it was something else, man.
That must have been.
The team couldn't obviously eat together. You had to just grab your food on the fly. We had to organize a lift group times so that, like, if you're in lift group one, you had enough time to knock at your speed work, your lifting, and make it to the showers and be out of the locker room before lift group two had to come in.
In the building.
Yeah, they had to be.
You guys are doing full corporate shift changes in there.
It was shift change. That's exactly right. It was a shift change.
So
everybody had to be out. They had to have their food and out the building before. There was a little overlap because the guys would go upstairs to get their food and then the other group would come in the lower door into the locker room. So there was no crossover where they weren't, you know, past each other in the hallway and things like that.
Talk about a welcome to the shit moment for your first summer as the head man. Yeah, that's crazy.
Wearing mask outside.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
In hindsight, it was insane.
Yeah, it was a crazy year. Crazy year. But hey,
G-Bone,
right?
What do you got?
Well, I don't want to backpedal too much, but with being at Florida State, I mean, obviously, like, Florida State fans are crazy. You still pull for the Noles at all?
From a distance. Like, I've lived, which is crazy to say, you know, I have no connection to the Midwest, but I've lived in Iowa longer than I've lived anywhere else in my life.
Wow.
So, like, my kids are Hawks. Both my kids were born here. Like, I'm a Hawk.
Fair enough. That's the answer I wanted to hear. That was a perfect answer.
Black and gold in the blood, baby.
That's it.
Well, Coach, we won't take too much more of your time. We really appreciate the hour that you had to sit down with us. It was a ton of fun just going over what's new in strength and conditioning, what's going on in the weight room these days, and just catching up on some good old times. So we really appreciate your time, and best of luck.
Have a great camp.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It was great seeing you guys again. I miss you guys. Yeah.
Miss you guys, too, a lot, like every day.
Let me know if I can come swing by and steal a Rice Krispie treat after practice.
Some baked Lays or some pretzels?
Hell yeah.
if you eat it, you got to weigh in now. So
I'll weigh in. I'll make weight, too.
Okay.
All right, Coach. We appreciate your time.
We'll be looking forward to watching you all this season, man.
All right. Yep. You guys got to come through.
We will, man.
Try and make that happen.
Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you want more, you can check us out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube by searching Washed Up Walk-Ons. And if you're interested in supporting the show, head over to patreon.com/washedupwalkons, where you can find bonus podcasts, merchandise, and other cool perks. Best part, half of your subscription benefits the kids at UI Children's Hospital. We'll see you next time. Hawks by a million.